Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
We're beginning with what may be some common misperceptions about the mental health of the shooter in Texas and mass shooters in general. Here's what President Trump said in the hours after the shooting at the Sutherland Springs Church.
I think that mental health is your problem here. This was based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual, a lot of problems over a long period of time.
But our guest says research finds that blaming mass violence on mental illness is misguided. Dr. Jonathan Metzl is director of the Center for Medicine, Health, and Society at Vanderbilt University, and he joins us today from Nashville. And Dr. Metzl, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
You heard what the president said. I think many Americans believe that no one would commit mass murder unless they were mentally ill. What don't we understand about this?
Well, certainly I would say that in part, what President Trump is talking about is understandable in that I think that there's in the aftermath of trauma, a kind of reflexive assumption that there's a kind of dividing line between the sane world, people who just want to live their lives, want to send their kids to school or go to church or go to movie theaters, and the insane world, people who would commit cold-blooded mass murder. And in that sense, I think it makes sense why mental illness becomes a kind of lingua franca after mass shootings, in which people say only somebody with a certain kind of mental illness could commit such a horrific act. And so on one hand, I think he's speaking to an emotional truth that a lot of people experience as they try to process a trauma like this. And at the same time, I find comments like his, and particularly from someone who's the leader of our country, to be the height of irresponsibility for a number of reasons. One is, obviously, it's just far too early. You didn't hear anybody from the mental health community jump out and talk about this as a mental health issue in any way because the details weren't known at all. And so in that sense, it seemed like a rush to judgment that, I mean, in his statement, he also said this isn't a guns issue. It felt like it was trying to deflect another conversation about guns and policies and just say this is a problem of one individual brain. And then the other part is, as research that I do and other people do shows, mental illness is not a causally linked factor in and of itself in mass shootings or in gun violence. And in fact, some people might argue that people with mental illness are less likely to commit mass shootings because they require a certain level of organization. People with mental illness, very severe mental illness, simply can't plan out mass shootings. And so the idea that this is a causal factor just covers over a lot of other factors that are at play.
You also a minute ago used a word that I think we ought to understand better. You said, you know, the emotional truth feels like nobody who's sane would do anything like this. I think there's a misunderstanding about what insanity and sanity is and how we apply that in trying to understand mental illness. What would you say about that?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, if you think about the major mental illnesses and indeed the diagnoses that people throw around after mass shootings, things like schizophrenia or depression, things, kind of the major diagnoses, none of those mental illnesses have a symptom that involves hurting somebody else, let alone shooting somebody else. And in fact, if you just look at kind of the major symptom constellations, schizophrenia, people have what are called negative symptoms. So they have low energy. They stay home. They're, not engaged in society. Depression, as many people know, what's called neurovegetation is one of the symptoms. So again, people disengage from society. And so a lot of times what we see is that people argue that actually having mental illness makes you less likely to commit a violent act rather than more likely because you're withdrawn from society. And certainly data studies show that in a way persons with mental illness are almost across the board less likely than sane people to commit gun crimes.
When you heard about the Texas shooter's court-martial for domestic violence, and then you heard about the details that involved that domestic violence, did it give you any kind of a different view about Devin Kelly, again, the shooter in this Texas church, about his state of mind? I mean, did it reinforce basically what you're here to say about your research today?
Well, I mean, again, certainly I think this is a moment of coming together and empathy. And so in that sense, you know, again, I understand what the dynamic is, which is that people are trying to search for an answer to explain a question that we all want on all sides of the spectrum politically, which is why did this happen and how can we prevent it again? And so in that sense, I understand why people are looking for, you know, it's this thing or it's that thing. Mass shootings are very complicated, as is gun violence, very often multifactorial. Now, that being said, there is a demographic that we see very often with at least high-profile recent mass shootings of kind of white, middle-age-ish men, histories of domestic use or abuse, lots of firearms, factors like that. Now, again, the problem is it's not like that that's going to predict a mass shooting in the future because not everybody who owns a lot of guns or is white or has a history of domestic violence is obviously going to go on to commit a horrific act like this. But certainly there are demographic factors that I think are at play that make us think about factors other than mental illness in these mass shootings.
Dr. Jonathan Metzl is with us. If you've just tuned in, we asked him to come on and talk about what are often misassumptions, misunderstandings about mental illness and these acts of mass violence. He is director of the Center for Medicine, Health, and Society at Vanderbilt University, has done some very interesting research that we're going to dig into here in a minute. But if you have questions about this link between a perception of mental illness and the people who carry out these mass shootings, we welcome your calls here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can also reach me on Twitter at CarrieMPR. I was reading some specifics, Dr. Metzl, of yours and Kenneth McLeish's study that came out. And when the study came out, you said, gun discourse after mass shootings often perpetuates the fear that some crazy person is going to come shoot me. But if you look at the research, it's not the crazy person you have to fear. Dig into that a little more and then tell me why you added that last phrase. It's not the crazy person you have to fear.
Well, I think that mass shootings, it's in a way everybody's worst nightmare, right? That a random stranger is going to break into someplace that is a sanctuary of various kinds. Certainly a church is a kind of sanctuary, but so is a school in Sandy Hook and a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. And so in a way, the terror of those moments is that the random stranger is going to come in and commit cold-blooded murder for people he's never met before. But if you look across the country and across data, we have about 38,000 gun deaths a year in the United States, and roughly 80% or so are committed. There's a lot of gun suicide, but killing somebody else often occurs within a social network, right? So you're far, far, far more likely to be shot by an angry domestic partner, by a neighbor, by a relative, somebody in your social network, rival gang member. And so in that sense, social networks are far more predictive of gun death across the country than this random stranger violence. And certainly studies not just by people like me, but also by police and other databases show that again and again, that you're much more likely to be shot by someone you know or have an association with. And in that regard, if we really want to prevent gun death in this country, among other things, we should study social networks to understand why is it that we're often, have that kind of those kind of patterns. And then also, I think a lot of our policies are misguided in that sense. And I say that because, as any mental health practitioner will tell you, one of the main risk factors for committing violence is a past history of violence. And so people with histories of domestic use or abuse, people with histories of assault, things like that, those should be people who are red flagged. And certainly that's what a national mandated background check system on gun sales would do. But unfortunately, there are many holes in that system, as we've seen here.
Quite a few calls for you here, Dr. Metzl. I'm going to grab a call here from Pam in St. Paul. Hi, Pam. Good to have your
Hello.
Call. What are you thinking about?
You. Well, I just got on, and I concur with your doctor. I work in mental health. I've got a couple of masters, but I also was in law enforcement, and I'm very disturbed about using mental health disorders as another way to stigmatize and blame people. I was in law enforcement, had to make a choice for my own health to get out because it's not allowed. And, you know, it's something I've had since I was 15 years old. I have major depression, anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. And it's not something you choose. It's something you have. It's very much like any other, you know, medical thing. And so it's disturbing to hear and to constantly get this, oh, you know, there are shooters out there, you know, because they have mental illness.
Right.
And that just, most people with mental illnesses are not violent in any way, shape, or form. In fact,
yeah, Pam, here's I have to do this because we have a number of other people that want to get to this. But Jonathan, I think Pam has brought up something that we haven't talked about yet, and that's stigma. So mm-hmm. what happens when we automatically apply the mental illness label to someone who commits an act of violence like this? Not only misunderstanding, but there's stigma that attaches to the rest of people who are living everyday peaceful lives with mental illness. I don't think we should miss that.
No, it's incredibly stigmatizing. And just to repeat the obvious here, it's not just people who are doing this. This was a claim made by the President of the United States in the direct aftermath of the shooting, again, without evidence about what actually happened. And what it does is it plays to these timeless stereotypes that have disproved again and again and again, that people with mental illness are ticking time bombs. But it also does the work of deflecting attention from all the other factors we might be talking about, because it plays into this assumption that people feel like they know, oh gosh, of course it's mental illness. And so it's irresponsible, and it's also, as the caller mentions, incredibly stigmatizing.
I want to make sure we don't miss something else that your study found, and I think you said this, that mentally ill people are often more likely to be victims, not perpetrators. I want us to understand this. Say something about your research on that, if you would.
Well, certainly, I think we see this. I think we see this in a number of kind of shooting studies. So, for example, in the aftermath of police shootings, for example, police often misinterpret symptoms of mental illness as threats. And so, for example, there was a case in New Mexico, as one example, where people with mental illness were far more likely to be shot by the police. They were kind of triggers because people misunderstood psychiatric symptoms as being kind of threatening or hostile. And again, we see this across the board, that people who are acting odd or seemingly threatening become targets in a way. And so it's this interesting dichotomy where people with mental illness are less likely than the average to attack other people or to shoot other people. They're often targeted in particular instances because of the way they act, and yet the popular discourse blames them for the thing that they're being victimized for. So it's this horrible perpetuation of a stigma that really stops us from self-reflection, from addressing you know, ourselves and reflecting about the society we're creating with all these guns.
Well, let's go to Laura here in Duluth. Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi.
What do you want to say?
Well, I was hoping that maybe he could discuss whether there's a link between these mass shooters and whether they're on prescribed drugs for their mental illness. Seems like that's never really discussed.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think she's talking about medication, psychotropic drugs, whether that figures into your research or what we should understand, perhaps, if that's in the background of some of these people who are violent in these massive ways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the hard part, again, I don't mean to complicate every single call, but, you know, mass shootings are so rare that they're increasingly frequent in the news, but I mean, in relation to all the other shootings we have in this country, that it's hard to make across the board generalizations. So I can tell you that in everyday gun violence, again, the gun violence that's nearing 40,000 people a year dead in this country, that alcohol and drugs very frequently play a part. That if there's a presence of alcohol and an interpersonal altercation, that and a gun's around, that the chance that is going to result in a shooting rises dramatically. And I live in Tennessee, so I care about that a lot because you can carry loaded handguns into bars, for example. And so the mix of alcohol or drugs and guns is one we should be wary of from a public health perspective. As far as psychiatric medications, which maybe that was the implication, I mean, again, certainly in extreme examples, we know, for example, in some of the early-ish mass shootings in Columbine and other places that, you know, shooters have had a history of being on psychiatric medications. But again, that the leap then that the psychiatric medications are causing any kind of mass shooting is one we have to be very wary of. So there's no causal connection. It's more multifactorial.
Well, we got a call from Brandon in Duluth who says, I served 8 years in the Army and was diagnosed with severe depression anxiety. A lot of times people are discharged for that. He says, I'm worried or wondering about the speaker's opinion. Is that right for the military to do that? Is there any connection here with military policy?
Well, again, you know, mental illness is a broad term, right? I'm using it very broadly here. I realize that. And I realize that there are a lot of mental illness issues that come up. I mean, think about the military, and there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of shooting, there's a lot of mental illness type symptoms being caused by just what the military does in the first place. And so in that sense, I just think it's important to be empathic and understanding and not to in any way stigmatize or exclude people. And certainly in the military where there's, I think, a relatively functioning system of mental illness support, and certainly one that's gotten a lot better as we become increasingly aware of the kind of issues that arise just from being a soldier. And that's certainly work that my colleague Ken McLeish here at Vanderbilt has done a lot of work on.
Yeah, that will be interesting to explore when he has some new research coming out. On Twitter here, listener says, nothing is black and white, including mental states. Trying to end the mental health stigma is made more difficult. And to the phones here, to Judy in Menominee. Hi, Judy, what are you curious about? Hi, Judy, are you there? Okay, I think she was asking about PTSD and noting that Kelly, I'm sorry, in Texas, had a dishonorable discharge. Is there anything to understand about that? There's also, I think, stigma around PTSD, Jonathan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Again, all these factors are factors in society that we want to be open about. And again, I also think that it's understandable that we're trying to explain something that's incredibly complex, and we're trying to do it, you know, 1 or 2 days after the fact. And so I think that in a way, you know, we're going to learn a lot more about this incident, and hopefully something that helps us process it in a way. I mean, think about we're a couple of weeks past Las Vegas, and it's still, there's still so many open questions. And so these questions are so complicated. And I just think we need to, you know, try to support each other at a time like this. And at the same time, I think that part of the role of mental illness is not just about the mental illness of the shooter, right? The psychiatric state. It's also the bigger question of what's happening to the psychological state of our country with having to live through these traumas every 2 or 3 weeks. And what does it mean that the response in some ways seems to be, let's have a more militarized society where we are carrying weapons into places that where we never had to think about our safety before and factors like that. And so I think there is a role for mental health expertise here, but it's not just about diagnosing the shooter. It's also thinking just about the broader psychological implications of what's exactly happening here.
One last call here from Wendy in Shorewood. Hi, Wendy. You wanted to say what? Oh, we might have missed Wendy here. Okay, Jonathan, thank you so much. Really good to have your call, your insight here. Appreciate that. I think it was helpful. Jonathan Metzl is director of the Center for Medicine, Health, and Society at Vanderbilt University, joining us today from Nashville.